I read a report that the average, first-time home buyer is now 40 years old. We should be ashamed of that. We have to get things under control. When I first started building coffee shops, and I use this example all the time. It's called FRP. It's a plywood with an easy clean backing on it. I used to be able to buy sheets of that for $38 a sheet. It's still now, and has been since COVID, about $75 a sheet. Now, that's just to build a little 12 by 32 or 20 by 40 more or less garage kit for a coffee shop. I couldn't imagine buying a house or building a house now.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and on the Illinois side of the river, we've got a very important primary election taking place next Tuesday. Key races on both sides of the ballot, Republican and Democrat, and one of them is for the 17th congressional district seat, the Republican nomination. And I'm very pleased to have with me one of the candidates today. He's Dylan Vancel, and Dylan, thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, let's start. I like to ask candidates why they're running, but go ahead and give us, for listeners who aren't familiar with you, talk a little bit about your background experience and why you chose to seek this seat.
Yeah, so my background, I spent 10 years on the railroad. I spent a year in Montana, 5 years in South Dakota before my wife and I started having kiddos and moved back home. Had to be close to the grandparents. But while I was out in South Dakota, I was actually the legislative director for the state of South Dakota for the railroad union. Now, that was it was quite the experience. That was kind of my first, dabble into politics. Moved back home, worked for the Canadian Pacific Railroad out of the Quad Cities for a few years. Was tired of being gone 5 or 6 days a week with the railroad. Love the job, love operating trains, all throughout the mountains. And, I can't imagine there's too many railroad engineers who have operated trains from the loading facilities for coal all the way to where they burn the coal in Chicago and in Minnesota. So I made that full route. But then we started Dame Fine Coffee. We just opened up our seventh location just north of Peoria here, about 6 months ago now. Time flies by when you're having fun. We have several more locations to come. We also have a distribution company. We help supply around 40 other coffee shops on a weekly basis. With that, that led me into my community involvement. I jumped on my local school board in 21, right in the midst of COVID and what was happening there. I don't know how I got so lucky to jump on the school board and start a business and during COVID, but here we are. We got through it. But I serve on the Eagle View Community Health Board. It's a rural health care facility. We have three locations spread between West Central Illinois here. Also served about 5 years on the Monmouth Area of Chamber of Commerce Board. And that's led me to, I'll be honest, I'm going to continue to keep complaining about things, but I'm at least throwing my hat in the ring to make a change.
What topics in particular are you motivated by here that caused you to decide to run? I mean, you got previous experience on a local school board. It's a big jump up for Congress. Something must have really motivated you to undertake this.
It is. And, my journey I thought was going to start with state level politics. I'd contemplated jumping into a House rep race. But then, being in the super minority and with my background, the powers that be actually reached out and asked if I would step up and do the Congress level. Took my wife and I some time to really think about it because that's a little larger scale than I expected. I think with my business background, union background, I think we have a really good shot of winning in November. It's my biggest things, and really it comes from things that affect me in my businesses. You know, my electricity bills, just in one of my seven locations, our electricity bill went from $1,400 a month to $2,900 a month. It's just not affordable. Now, I mean, that's just one of seven locations. My house is the same way. Our electricity bills have become a second mortgage. We have to get it under control. We have to fire up our coal plants here in Illinois, and we have to invest in nuclear. Now, along with that, another reason I jumped in, my health insurance. Healthcare is just, it's a wreck and it's not sustainable. Our Just for my wife and I and my two kids, our premiums went from $2,200 a month to $3,000 a month. It's not affordable. We had to switch our plan. We went to a Christian health share plan because it was much more affordable. And that way, God forbid something crazy happens, we have some sort of coverage. And I feel like that's probably how a lot of the country is right now. They can't afford the premium, so they're looking for other options. Or they're just going without health insurance, unfortunately.
That you've just hit on two things that I hear a lot of on this affordability is the word these issues, utility bills and health care. And I think with your position on the health board kind of gives you another perspective in addition to being a small businessman and somebody with a family. But what I mean, this health care thing, how do we get out of that? I mean, you've got people on the right saying we need to go to more a private system, get government out of it. On the left, they're saying Medicare for all. I mean, it just seems so mind-boggling. And I know people out there deal with this the way you and I do. It's just, what do you think? How do we get started tackling this?
I when I hear, Medicaid for all and that, boy, anything the government's involved with, talk about a disaster, right? So the biggest thing I think I am tired of the government in many areas just throwing money at things, hoping that's going to fix the problem. That's what our healthcare system is. We have to quit just throwing money at the problem. We have to fix the root of the problem. So for an example, Aetna insurance company. Not only do they own the insurance company, but they own the pharmacies, they own the pharmacy benefit managers, they own the hospitals and physicians, and on top of it all, they own a bank. What in the world is a health insurance company doing owning a bank? We have to break up this vertical integration in our healthcare system. Now, you go to the doctor or the hospital with a broken arm. You don't have health insurance. Your bill might be $600 cash. I go to the hospital with the same broken arm, but I have health insurance. My bills might be $5,000 or $6,000. Should be the same price whether you have insurance or not. So that is what I would say the root of the problem. We have to fix that. We have to have price transparency for everywhere. Now, when you go to a local restaurant or you go out to buy a car, you know what the price is before you get there. At least you can look it up. With our healthcare system, none of that is available. Now, I've seen several videos online of people call, different regional hospitals and say, "Hey, what's your price on an MRI?" They're all different everywhere. Why is that? We have to have transparency with our pricing, and that will create some competition to drive down prices.
Yeah, I mean that's a great point because we don't even think about it. We don't for any procedure you don't really look at it. And in rural areas, as you know, it would be nice to have competition. You got to drive a ways, but I think people would be willing to do it if it was going to save them a little bit of money.
Well, I mean, that's just it. In West Central Illinois, where I'm at, we've got some providers over on the Iowa side, but then we've got the Quad Cities, Peoria, Bloomington. So we're kind of in the middle of a lot of options at about an hour and a half drive for a lot of them. If I knew an MRI was going to save me $500 if I went to Peoria versus the Quad Cities, I'm going to Peoria. So, we have to have transparency with our pricings, and that will reduce the costs, which in turn will lower our premiums.
I want to follow this line of discussion here because you mentioned Aetna and the big insurance companies. Generally, you're running a small business, and I'm not familiar with the market or whether you've got these big, well, you've got Starbucks and all. But in other places like tech, you've got these big tech companies, big ag business companies, and all. And a lot of people on both parties are more of a populist message, are saying we need to break them up. Especially big tech, it gets a little worrisome. I think about what they're doing. What are your thoughts on that?
Same thing. We have to break this up. We have to quit allowing these guys to continue to buy more and more of the share of the business, and especially in the ag industry. Just 20 miles to the west over in Iowa, there's a fertilizer facility over there that was owned by OCI. Well, then the Koch brothers took it over. So we have three major, manufacturers or fertilizer producers here in the US. It's just completely sabotaged our competitive market in that industry. Inputs continue to rise, and until we can break up some of these monopolies that have created high prices, we're going to continue to see it.
We both live in rural areas, and we've got what's called the rural-urban divide. A lot of people try to stoke that just for political purposes. And sometimes I think some of the rural residents have more in common with urban and suburban than you would think. But I just think our areas have been left behind to some degree, and I know that. Maybe there's others that disagree, and that's fine. But what to get their economy going out here, especially, and these counties are losing population. You know this. How do we get the economy going where your kids, have opportunities to stay if they want, as a choice? I mean, if they don't want to, fine. But if there's opportunities, they could stick around.
And that's a good, because that's the main reason I jumped into this. I have 7 and 9 year old boys at home. I'm busting my butt to build something to hand down to them or pass down to them. I don't know if that opportunity is going to be there in 15, 20 years the way we're going. So we have to get some of these things under control. Now, I appreciate fuel prices coming down and what Trump's done there. I'm in an area, I have a couple of businesses over in Iowa. So I go over there and get my 50 cents a gallon cheaper fuel than the Illinois fuel. I'm not as fortunate to do that all the time, but we have to get our utility bills lower, and we have to get our healthcare costs lower. Fuel prices are coming down. That's helping. But I employ over 60 young adults that are all 17 to 25, 26, and they just want to move out of mom and dad's house. And I'm sure a lot of mom and dads would like them to be able to move out of the house. I always joke with my kids when they turn 18, you're getting a U-Haul for your birthday. I don't think that'll actually happen, especially 10 years from now. But they just want to be successful. And I read a report that the average, first-time home buyer is now 40 years old. We should be ashamed of that. We have to get things under control. When I first started building coffee shops, and I use this example all the time. It's called FRP. It's a plywood with an easy clean backing on it. I used to be able to buy sheets of that for $38 a sheet. It's still now, and has been since COVID, about $75 a sheet. Now, that's just to build a little 12 by 32 or 20 by 40 more or less garage kit for a coffee shop. I couldn't imagine buying a house or building a house now. So I feel like we're dealing with a lot of COVID prices still, but as long as if we can get, I'm not against the tariffs. I think what Trump's doing with those and the negotiating tool that they've become to reduce some, get fair playing field all throughout the country. I think as long as we continue to bring investment back into the country, we're going to see some of these prices come down. Interest rates have come down here quite a bit in the last 18 months or so. I think those will continue to tick downwards. But we have to be careful because if we take them down too fast, I do agree with that it will cause a little bit of inflationary. We'll get some higher prices again. But I sat in a it was in Canton where I have a coffee shop down there too in Fulton County. And the University of Illinois held it was a mass exodus of young people out of Illinois. It was a forum type deal. And they asked me to come down and participate in that. And I thought it was funny. We wanted to talk about the lack of health, lack of healthcare facilities, lack of childcare, our schools slowly deteriorating, but they didn't want to talk about any of the hard-hitting issues, our high taxes, our regulation, our mandates that keep getting passed down. We have to have a more favorable tax structure and business structure here in Illinois. We're not going to be able to cut ourselves all the way out of the deficit here in Illinois. We're gonna have to grow our way out. Same, strategy that Trump's taken with our national deficit. Every county or every state that borders Illinois has a, it's about half of what our corporate tax rate is here in Illinois. Now, Trump has said it, and the number changes all the time, 10 trillion, 18 trillion, whichever, of investment that's coming back into the country. How much of that do you think is gonna come to Illinois? Zero with our current tax structures and policies in place. We have to incentivize businesses to want to come back to Illinois and be a part of the growth here.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Dylan Vancel, who's running for the Republican nomination for Congress in the 17th Congressional District. That, of course, includes the Illinois Quad Cities region, and other places like Peoria, Bloomington Normal, and Rockford. It's honestly, it's a gerrymandered district, and I think listeners know how I feel about that. But Dylan's been talking a little bit about why he's running. His background as a small business person, some of the key issues, the affordability issues, economic issues, what we got to get our economy moving. I wanted to move a little bit to you, this tariff issue is part of a larger issue, I think, with our relations with the world, our relations with China. I mean, that's big. And globalization, I think there's no doubt, has helped our farm economy by getting additional markets overseas. But boy, it's kind of hurt our manufacturing base, like Galesburg with Maytag leaving and all. How do you, I mean, I know you've given this some thought, but how do we manage that balance, that where all we're looking for, I think, is fair trade, but I don't think it's been that. And I think that's a fair statement for people on both sides to divide over the last 30
Absolutely.
years.
I agree. And we finally have a president now that's willing to tackle some of those issues. I think using the tariffs as a negotiating tool, like I mentioned before, I think things are heading in the right direction. Now, I've had, ag town halls or roundtables all throughout the district, because that's a big industry that's been affected by the tariffs. Those guys are okay with it. They said, you know what? I'm willing to sit here, sit back, and see this play out because I think things are heading in the right direction. And at the end of the day, all they want is a competitive market and open markets to be able to sell their products. That's it. So like I said, I think a lot of those things are heading in the right direction. We'll see some more light at the end of the tunnel here, but I get it. It's tough times.
I want to. I know that the federal government doesn't have primary responsibility over schools, but I know as a school board member, you've dealt on the ground level with a lot of key issues, and I think, I guess again, our schools are the key to our long-term competitiveness and viability, and it's got to be hard because I think in a lot of cases our schools aren't performing the way they should. What role do you see the federal government have in education? And it may be none. It may be let's keep them out of it. But what as a member of Congress, what would you think we need to do to strengthen our schools?
So, and this is, there's several different routes. One, I want to talk on the Department of Education. Ever since that was created, we have seen declines in our schools. 70, 80% of our eighth grade students can't read at grade level. That's a problem. So I don't necessarily agree with completely abolishing the Department of Education. But it's about a $280 billion a year line item. Only about 20% of it actually makes it to the school districts because of all the management and just it paying for itself to operate. So we really have to look at that. We have to make some cuts there because one, if we can send that money back into the districts and every student, reports I had seen was around $2,300 a student, I'll lower it and I'll even say $1,000 a student. Guess what that does to our property taxes? We can reduce some of that burden on our residents and our property taxes and get some of that money that we're already paying back into our school system. Now, along with that, here in Illinois, about 20% of our students in my school district have what's called an IEP. Now, that's a special, learning. They need some extra help. Now, with those come, there's extra mandates and everything else we have to accommodate for, which I agree. We need to help our students. But with all these mandates and different things that are passed down to us on a state level, when we're only funding them at 50 or 60%, what is that doing to our school districts? I mean, we're in a, west central part of Illinois here, where you can go 20, 30 miles to the west and work in Iowa and make an extra $15,000 a year. Teachers are hard to come by as it is. So and unfortunately, I don't know what it's going to look like 5 or 10 years down the road from now. I think what we'll see is, there might be a teacher in Monmouth that's teaching a math class online to West Central and United, and maybe a school, Mercer County. They might be teaching multiple classes and we'll have aides in those classes to help facilitate things. I don't know how we're going to get out of this. The teacher shortage is extremely alarming to me.
I had a guest on not too long ago talking about that, and a nursing shortage as well, especially in rural areas. But I wanted to follow up, and I'll apologize to you and our listeners. I meant to do this earlier, but when we were talking about utilities and power, one of the big issues right now is artificial intelligence. Our listeners, I know, have been reading about this. I'm sure you've been hearing about it, and the demands that these artificial intelligence facilities are going to make on your local power rates and water, but mainly power. There's a lot of concerns. Do you think the government needs to step in a little bit and regulate this, or should it just stay out of it?
Less government's always better. But in this case, we have to protect the residents. I mean, I'm not against data centers by any means, but what I am against is them coming in and using an exorbitant amount of energy and water, which is just going to raise our prices here in Illinois. As long as we continue to buy our power from other states, the rates are going to continue to go up. So until we can get to where we're self-sufficient energy-wise, and I'd spoken to a gentleman that was a lobbyist for coal for decades. And he said, with the reduction of our coal facilities here in Illinois, we're going to see blackouts. And I'm not saying that there's not a place for wind and solar. I think they're an addition too, but they will never be able to keep up with our base load power. Never. They're too inefficient. And now, as a business owner, my businesses aren't subsidized. Why should wind and solar? If you can't make it work on your own, obviously it's not that viable of an option.
I want to turn real quick to international issues. We're just it, on the for our listeners, the day we're recording this interview, we've just been United States along with Israel has been bombing Iran and the Middle East. We're I think on day three or four of it, the date of our taping here, just to give some reference to our listeners. But what's your thoughts generally, Dylan, on the president undertaking these types of military activities, including Venezuela? Does Congress need to authorize these acts in advance? And what's just your thoughts in general on specifically on what Trump's done in Iran?
So the president has the option, the ability to take these routes. Now, with Iran, I mean, the massacre of 30 to 40,000 people over the last couple months, we had to have somebody step in and help that and get rid of this regime that's taken over, Iran. Now, I think we're going about it the right way, going in, being efficient and effective, and getting back out. That I'm all for that. We cannot allow Iran to have nuclear capability. We can't. At some point, I mean, when they're wandering the streets chanting death to America, they're building a nuke to head over here. We cannot allow that to happen.
I want to give you, I always do this with candidates, just kind of we've got about a minute, well, 2 minutes left here. Just kind of a closing statement from you. Why voters should vote for you in the upcoming primary Tuesday. They're just maybe hearing you for the first time, kind of like a court case, a closing statement, why you should earn their votes.
Yeah, so the biggest thing is I am so sick of this divide with our politics. It is time that we come together and actually get things done for the American people. Democrat, Republican, I don't care. It's about time we start working together to help the American people. Now, with my background, with union, I lived that for 10 years, small business owner, family man, I've been entrenched in my communities for a long time now. We need somebody that's not just a social issue politician like Eric Sorensen. We need somebody that's really going to work for the American people. I mean, Eric Sorensen just dipped out on the State of the Union address here a few nights ago, decided to protest and not go. That's what he was elected to do. And he just decided to decline and not represent any of the constituents in the 17th. I will not do that. I will work for you day in and day out. Making sure that our pocketbooks get to keep some more of the hard-earned money that we've worked for.
Okay. Dylan Vansel has been my guest today on Heartland Politics. He's a Republican candidate for the 17th Congressional District nomination. That election again is next Tuesday, and I urge all everybody out there to vote. Whatever party. In Illinois, you've got to choose your party to participate in a primary election. But I encourage everybody to do so. These are important times, and in spite of our divisions, we're still all Americans, and I think we should go participate with the freedom to vote and to protect all of our freedoms. So, Dylan Vansel, again, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on. And just a quick thing here in the state of Illinois, if you voted Democrat your entire life, you can walk into that poll anytime and request a Republican ballot. So there's
That's
no
right.
party affiliation there. You can go in and vote how you so choose. And I hope you guys will all keep in mind of your checkbooks when you go to the polls this year.
All right, Dylan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.